to this episode of the Insights Podcast on the Acadia Broadcasting Network. I'm Don Mills.
And I'm David Campbell.
David, great conversation with Roger King, the CEO of Supplement King today. We don't do much in the retail space, but this is a great story. It's another of our entrepreneurial series that that we've been working on over the last 3 years. We have some really great stories. This is another one. This is a story of somebody who had an idea in university, started as a part-time operation. Reminds me of myself a little bit, and ended up creating a national company out of Dartmouth, Nova Scotia.
Yeah, it's a classic entrepreneurial story. He had an idea. He started going door to door and fulfilling orders himself. And then, as you say, under 20 years later, he's now close to, if not the largest company in his space across the country with, as people will hear in this interview, very aggressive and ambitious growth plans. So it's a great story. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about retail, but retail is a very important sector of the economy, and it's really great to see a national company. I had heard of Supplement King. I just hadn't heard the fact that it was actually headquartered in Nova Scotia.
Yeah. And he just recently opened his 100th retail outlet in British Columbia. It's a business that he didn't tell us exactly what his revenues were, but they're north of $100 million for the whole company. It has 1,000 employees across the country. And he has, he's got a group of head office workers in Atlantic Canada. We love head office jobs, because they're depending on revenue from somewhere else and bringing revenue back to this region. So that's a good part of the story as well. But the other thing that I really liked is the ambition. I mean, you asked him the question at the end, what motivates you? His first motivation was to get to 10, then it was to get to 25, then he gets to 100. And what's his motivation right now? He wants to get to 200 outlets in 3.5 years. He's already either the largest or next to the largest supplement operation in Canada. He's going to double that in the next three or four years. That's ambition. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we've talked about this before. We don't need every business owner or entrepreneur to have those kind of ambitions, but you need some. If you want to have a successful economy, you need export revenue, and that's exactly what a company like this does. They build up. They have the head office in Nova Scotia. So, yeah, you need some, and I've always been curious. Is it something in the water? I've asked you about this, your own personal career. Is it something in the water? Was it something in the family structure? Was it what actually motivates people not to just start a business but to want to grow it into something fantastic and large? And this is a great example of that for sure.
Yeah, and we've been trying to focus on what's possible in our region, that we can play nationally and internationally. We've seen through the startup communities that a lot of the focus of the startups are not on local markets any longer. They're on bigger markets, national markets, or beyond that. I find that really encouraging about the future for this region. We're thinking larger, bolder in terms of what the possibilities are. And Roger's company is an excellent example in a space that you don't often think about. Who would think that you could start a national retail chain out of this region? And it's a great success. And it's one of the things that we like to highlight on this podcast.
We'll start with Sobeys, but we certainly will take the rest.
Well, Sobeys is obviously the best probably retail success story coming out of this region, but they're not a lot. Obviously, it's not something that we're particularly good at. But Roger has proven that if you have a good idea, you work hard, you've got a good plan, and you execute, that you can achieve the kind of success that he's had. We had it's a wide ranging conversation. We also talked about the business of being in the supplement business, which has its critics, obviously, and how they go about ensuring that the safety and effectiveness of the products are what they're supposed to be. It's a really good conversation for people who are interested in supplements alone. So with that introduction, here's our really interesting conversation with Roger King, the CEO of the Supplement King. On this this episode of the Insights Podcast, we are pleased to have as our guest Roger King, the CEO of the Supplement King. Roger, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Don. Thanks, David.
We would like to begin today by finding out more about your background. Can you tell our listeners about your career path and how you ended up in your current role as the CEO of Supplement King?
Sure. I grew up outside of St. John, New Brunswick, and then moved to Halifax, which is often referred to as the big city from where I grew up, to attend St. Mary's University back as a 20-year-old. I had not previously visited Halifax, so I was immediately struck by the level of prosperity, the amount of commercial activity, business. It just seemed to be like the hustle and bustle that I wasn't used to at home. I spent a few years at SMU, some great years. I worked at the campus bar, embarked upon a business degree, had a bit of interest in business always. But at the same time, I had a keen interest in fitness, and I had had this since I was 16 or 17 years of age. So being a poor student at the time on student loans, I didn't have a budget to supplement my fitness and my weightlifting hobby. So I began pooling orders together in my second year at SMU, and Supplement King was born. It was a campus business and remained such for a few years until eventually I took the dive into retail by opening up a kiosk in Scotia Square Mall while also working in the service industry. I had some great restaurant jobs and worked at a high-end restaurant at the time as a busboy and a waiter and a few of the bars and restaurants downtown. Doing it all together allowed me to do so without seed capital or any type of financing and truly learn the business from the ground up. I didn't eventually complete that degree at St. Mary's, although I maintained a great relationship and we continue to have a close partnership with the St. Mary's Athletics Department. Really who were my original customers when I first founded the business way back when. So I guess we would call it, that'd be a bit of a non-traditional path into entrepreneurship, but something that was born out of necessity and then grew out of opportunity.
So we're going to go deeper into your whole process here, but I wanted to ask you why Supplement King. Did you already have a vision of being the king, or why did you name it Supplement King?
Well, you know, I had the good fortune of being blessed with a last name that finds its name well into different business names. Funny enough, if you want to actually hear the origin of the Supplement King, back in my university days, The Simpsons were huge, and there was an episode with the Plow King, and I thought, you know what, Supplement King sounds like it has a ring to it. And we've gone with it ever since.
That's a great story. You started your business online, as you mentioned, while attending the university before establishing your first retail outlet in 2006. You just opened your 100th retail, we understand, outlet in British Columbia. Can you tell us what are the key factors that have led you to such rapid growth for your company?
Yeah, thank you, David. Look, when I began my business, online shopping was, I guess, in its early days, it wasn't readily accessible to startups or very small companies. This was something that larger companies with deeper pockets and the ability to leverage the internet were mostly engaged in. My marketing and my business in the very early days consisted of flyering parking lot windows at fitness centers. Over and over and over again, I would visit the parking lots, tuck flyers with my monthly specials under the car windows, and receive phone calls in class. And then from there, I would show up at the door with the order in hand, debit machine or cash payment was accepted. And that was the true origin of the business. From there, I did eventually take the dreaded semester off, dreaded if you ask my mom and dad at the time. Although being a student loan guy, they didn't have a whole lot of say in my career path. Opened that kiosk at Scotia Square Mall. And from there, my real learnings in retail began. I had quickly realized being located next to a fitness center was going to be an important part of any type of growth. Also realized that my customer was not who I expected him or her to be. I thought that I would see athletes and fitness enthusiasts, when in reality, I saw most of the corporate crowd from Amira or many of the office towers above that were looking to try to lead a healthier life, but very unsure of how to do so. Quickly also realized that this crowd was much less price sensitive than traditional supplement consumers at the time. And if they were going to get some result and a little bit of bang for their buck, they were pretty happy to pay for us. So looking at our biggest competitor, which at the time was Popeye Supplements Canada, and their marketing and their direction towards the bodybuilding and athlete crowd, we decided to take all of our marketing and store fixturing and branding in a very mainstream fitness goals based direction. And so everything that we do in our business, we're talking about what is the fitness goal when somebody walks through our doors and how do we help them achieve this?
So wanted to ask you, what has been the most significant challenges for you to expand your network of retail outlets across the country, Roger?
In the very early days, we'll call it between 10 and 25 stores, I guess as kind of a fledgling or breakout retail group, the established competitors had such strong vendor relationships and they had the buying power, breaking through those walls, so to speak, in order to, you know, build a margin sustainable business that was replicable was a huge challenge. It took a lot of conversation. It took a lot of belief on both sides that this is something that they should invest in through lower pricing, through greater support. But as time went on, we were able to show the suppliers that we were bringing new customers to the market, a large customer demographic that had been previously untapped. Over the past 15 years, it's been an explosion in the amount of people that consume natural health products. This used to be something that was reserved kind of for the athlete crowd 20 years ago. You know, you open up almost anybody's cupboard today and you'll find vitamins or protein powder or natural health products of some sort. And Supplement King has worked very hard to be that retailer of choice for the majority and hopefully everybody out there. The other challenge, if we're going to get to a little more of a recent spot, you know, with the rising cost of everything, there is increasing competition over the past 2 years for spaces our size. And our size space would be a 1,200 to 1,500 foot space in a strip center, often grocery anchored, and hopefully gym anchored as well, because that works very well for us. This used to be a space that was quite readily available all across the country. But now with the increase in costs per foot, we're seeing traditionally larger retailers and quick serve restaurants downsize or right size their operations, from the traditional 2,500 to 2,000 feet and are now, in competition with us for these spaces.
Yeah. So to put it in context, you mentioned Popeye's Supplements as one of the big players. Where would Supplement King rank currently in Canada in this sector?
Yeah, so we're both private companies. It's very difficult to ascertain exactly where on the revenue scale where we stand. Without getting into the nitty-gritty, we're a nine-figure network business. We would be of similar size on a door count basis. And I say that because they don't offer up the information anywhere online as to how many locations they have. At one point, they did boast 140 locations nationally, but now it now boasts 100 locations nationally in their marketing.
Yeah. So it's the two of you basically that are at that top of the list.
We would be the two truly national brands out there. Yes. And they've been around a long time, Don. They were founded in 1989 in Alberta. And have done a terrific job growing from coast to coast. They were the first group to do so, relatively uncontested. And, they've been in the market a long time, so they've done some things right.
Well, that's a great accomplishment to go from zero to at the top with one other company in Canada and be national. So congratulations on that success. That's really a great story, Roger.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about your expansion. What is your main strategy? Because, these are not corporately, you don't own all the outlets. You have obviously licensees. Tell us about your main strategy to expand your brand.
Yeah, that's correct. We 95% of the stores are licensee owned and operated. Near all of our operators at this point in our life cycle are multi-unit owners. We even have a few that are in the double digits now in terms of store count. So 8 out of 10 stores that we open each year will be within our existing network of operators, which is something that we do prefer. Often those that we're growing with, they have to meet our growth criteria. They have to have a certain amount of managerial acumen. They have to be able to prove that they can follow our program and execute on all of our KPIs. And we do spend a lot of time in this area, ensuring that we corporately support the franchisee or the licensee network in their growth and in their scaling. This is, you know, via regular Zoom calls. There's digital online learning. We have our own app so that all levels of participants in our business, whether you're a frontline employee, a district manager, or a licensee, all of the assets and all of our communications take place through this app. So we don't end up being one of those organizations with endless email chains that eventually kind of fall on deaf ears. We found that's been successful for us. And then we get together in person with our development partners, which are those that are in growth contracts that are both store count and chronologically driven. So they will have proven their ability to operate successfully within our network. And as such, they're given a contract for 4 to 12 units within a specific area, within a specific amount of time. And that's very much dependent on our ability to find those winning locations that I mentioned are getting increasingly difficult to secure.
Yeah, so obviously master franchises are the way to go because you've got proven operators. I think that that's the model for most franchise operations today, isn't it?
Like it's certainly optimal because you have people who have significant businesses in their own right, and they're heavily invested in the brand quality and the standards.
So that I just have to tell you this little anecdote because you'll laugh at it. My original partner in my research businesses, we were looking at franchise operations early in our career, and we thought, you know, a great franchise would be Tim Hortons in the Halifax market. So, this is a long, long time ago. So, you know, we're looking at the market and say, yeah, the only way it's going to work is if we have multiple outlets. You know, getting one just doesn't make any sense. And at the time, there were 4 in Halifax. And we, in our great wisdom, decided that the market was saturated and it wasn't worth trying to go and get a franchise in Halifax. I think there's 44 now. Anyway, shows you, how immature we were at the time. But anyway, that's another story.
I will say, Don, you're not alone in your market analysis thought. Our operators often feel that a market is saturated. Have our competitors. When we went into Edmonton, as a great example, our biggest competitor had 6 locations. We currently have 13 and growing.
Wow.
So, it's so important to properly penetrate a market, not only to maximize value, of your own business, but to also box out competition.
Correct. Yeah. So just on that score, you have 100 outlets, 95 of them or so are franchisees, but the number of owners is only a handful, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. So that makes the ability to operate and get things done a lot simpler, doesn't it?
It does. It does. That way, when the company's, one of our biggest strengths is for many years now, we have been able to move together in one direction.
Right.
And in a system like ours, that ability is everything.
Right. Right. Exactly. So just for curiosity's purposes, what would it cost a franchisee to open an outlet?
So altogether, it's just give or take $400,000. Of that, $125,000 would be your inventory. Leasehold improvements are, ever increasing, despite our best efforts to try to cap those expenses.
Yeah,
but I find that to be very reasonable for the ROI that we offer.
Yeah. Another question I just wanted to ask you, because you mentioned the vendor relationships and obviously you're doing the purchasing, I suppose, for the whole network. How do you manage the product distribution for these outlets?
Yeah. So look, it would be very inefficient in every way possible to have all of these products shipped here to Dartmouth and then to have us redistribute these items all across the country. So what we've done is we've negotiated terms and price lists with every vendor that we operate, including marketing support, payment terms, And then every month we're running a different flyer cycle. So with us, training the buying cycles to be around these flyer cycles is very important because it gives our licensee network an opportunity to pick up some of those items at a slightly lower than everyday cost. And within our flyer, we're very strategic to ensure everything in our store gets some visibility in that flyer once every 7 to 8 months. This allows the training around selling through items in the flyer to truly turn that whole store so that the risk of stale dating, the risk of shrink is greatly reduced.
All right.
Can you give us a little sense of your growth ambition or your growth strategy here? How many additional retail outlets are you targeting to open in the next 5 years? Can you give us at least a ballpark?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I've said with our team and through some of our analysis based on how many Supplement Kings can operate within our, you know, our continuous population growth here in Canada, we feel that we can be at 200 doors within 3 to 3.5 years from now.
Wow.
So this year alone, we will open 26 new locations. We were happy to celebrate number 100 just a, you know, a short while ago, but we will opening 101 and 102 right on the heels of it. So.
Wow. Impressive.
Thank you. That is fantastic, yeah. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your e-commerce operations. Are you do you do a lot of sales through the website? And if so, how do your licensees benefit from the web sales?
So for us, the specialty retail that we're in is an interactive type of retail. Many of our customers enjoy coming in, interacting with the products, talking about what worked, you know, or what they've been using currently or what's worked before, and looking at options for what will work now. So the bulk of our business still takes place inside the brick and mortar store. Now, our e-com is live linked to every single inventory at every single store that we operate. So, you know, I like to joke, we have, you know, faster than Amazon service. We do a next day delivery pledge because we have 100 warehouses and growing from coast to coast. So when you complete an e-com ticket on our website, the site will automatically search out the closest location to your postal code and push that down to the licensee in order for them to fulfill that order. So on their side, they're in the e-com and brick and mortar business. There's no corporate competitor out there, which has been a traditional model in our space. We felt that that was not the way to go. And after much work and a great deal of expense, this is where we've landed.
I want to just get back to your position in the market for a second, Roger. Your company actually positions itself as Canada's leading sports nutrition retailer. Is there something special in that definition? Because obviously, you just told us earlier that when you started the company, that's what the sports market was where you targeted, and you found that it was a different market. So have you broadened your definition, or is that just a specific marketing tool that you're using right now?
You know, really great question, Don. Sports nutrition just would be kind of an identifier for the types of products that we sell in our store. Within our supplier network, they would deal in the holistic side and in the sports side. We wouldn't outwardly speak about ourselves or put ourselves in being a sports nutrition retailer. We would certainly be a health and performance retailer. That's right. Something that we would plant our flag in. But, you know, the use of sport nutrition is just more of a designation on the internal side of the business.
Okay. That makes sense. And, you know, we've already talked about the fact that you're head and head against Popeyes, but with your expansion plan over the next 3.5 years, is there any way they're going to be able to keep up with you? Or you're clearly going to be number one, are you not?
I think they do a terrific job with the customer base that they have. We spend a lot of our time and effort on the marketing side worrying about how to secure the next generation of shopper. Don't get me wrong. We're very focused on maintaining the relationships that we have today with every single customer. But if a business isn't thinking about the next generation, how they want to consume their marketing, you know, how you can reach them, how you can build a relationship and build trust, I think you're in trouble. So, you know, without weighing in on their practices, I think that we do a great job looking at the next generation of consumer.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Let me ask you, how do you differentiate your company from your competitors in the marketplace? What is different about Supplement King?
Well, when you visit a Supplement King, you won't find in our logos any flexing biceps. You won't find a fixturing that is, handmade cinder block counters or anything that is kind of aggressive in nature or overbearing. You're going to find a well-lit, premium retail outlet that is welcoming and that is comfortable to have discussions, whether you're looking to, increase your athletic performance or if you're looking to find a little bit of extra energy to play with your grandkids. We want to be the store for anybody with any fitness goal rather than being that bodybuilding store, I guess, that I alluded to earlier.
Yeah, so a broader market, in other words. You're trying to appeal to a much broader market.
Yep. Right?
So Popeyes is your direct competitor in the market, but you must also face competition from other retailers like Walmart and Costco and even online Amazon.
Sure.
How do you differentiate yourself from those bigger players in the market?
We actually really appreciate when certain products that we carry hit the Costco shelves or hit it big on Amazon. Amazon's a lot more difficult to determine just because it's a steady state. They have everything there. Our stores also host some Amazon products, and that just pushes through our website directly down to the franchisees. It's not a huge channel for us, but it's a part of the business. At Costco, oddly enough, whenever they list a product that we carry, they'll typically focus on one flavor. I'm sure you've noticed when you've been to Costco, they'll go big in one flavor or one particular format, whereas we carry a dozen flavors and we'll see a lift in all of those flavors because they're very good at creating a new customer. And then from there, with our outward marketing and some of our very aggressive retail offers, we can then take a customer that's identified themselves as a consumer of that product and pull them in when we have specials.
You've talked a little bit already about how you retain your customers, but we'd like to go a little deeper there. What strategies over your 15 plus 20 years or whatever in the business have worked best to retain existing customers so that they don't just go follow the lowest price or do something and that's easier?
Well, we certainly don't sit on our laurels when it comes to value. We want to ensure that as we grow, and we always have ensured that with our growth to date, that we're able to offer a retail price that is as low or lower than anything else in the market. We also don't want to live by price or die by price. So there's much more to our retailing than simply focused on a product and a price. We do have a royalty rewards program in place where there's bucks cash back that's associated with shopping with us. Most importantly, though, it really comes down to making sure that when somebody visits, that they're being heard. We train around asking open-ended questions. We train around talking about what products they've experienced in the past and what ancillary products would support that goal into the future. These are the things that can't easily be replicated on Amazon or online. For us, what we found is that our website customer is a customer that is, looking for a product and a price. And so we offer that. Those who come and visit us in store, which is still primarily the bulk of our business, they're looking to have a bigger conversation about their health and their fitness.
So we noticed you are the official supplement provider for both the CHL and the CFL. How's that worked out for you, that kind of large-scale sports-related promotion?
So these are new relationships for us. What attracted us to both of these brands was their grassroots approach in every market. In our business plan, and every time we open a new location, the lead-up marketing happens many weeks before the grand opening and involves meeting stakeholders in the fitness community, getting out to the local marathon, setting up promotional booths at community events. These organizations, CHL with its many teams in I guess we'll call them medium or small size city markets, that aligns very, very well with our values and our roots. So there was just a natural fit on all those fronts.
So you talked a little bit earlier about your sort of revenue range, which we appreciate given your private sector. So, but we'd also like to ask you about your workforce. So including your head office and your franchisees, can you give us a sense of how many people you employ across the country?
Yeah. We would be in or around 1,000 members to our team, which is terrific. I believe, according to some of the data that I've seen, our attrition is lower than average, particularly in the retail sector. I would like to believe, and we certainly do strive to create a fun, rewarding atmosphere for our team members. And I think that just our business in general attracts people that are interested in helping people on their fitness journey. You know, they likely have a strong interest in fitness and nutrition on their own. So people who have that interest, they tend to like to share those things, those areas of expertise. And so attracting people and retaining them is something that that while we work on it, we also have very dedicated people already within the organization.
So can you tell us a little bit about the head office? So how many of those jobs would be and what kind of functions would be in the head office in I assume, Halifax? Yeah.
Sure. So in our corporate office here, and we have a new office in behind IKEA in a new building that we just recently completed, there's 20 team members. Seven of them would be clerical and warehouse staff. So here we will warehouse all of our branded merchandise. So we have about 120 different SKUs that would have our logo, our brand name. These are things that we will, sell to franchisees and licensees, and they will then make them available to customers. So these are the items that we would produce, and then, warehouse and sell from here. We also have our marketing team, which is located in-house. And then we have our operations team, which, serves different functions, including training, continuous training programs, leasing and site selection, leasehold improvements, project management, and then general operations of the business. So purchasing, vendor relationships and such.
It's a fairly lean head office given the size of the company revenue wise and your growth planner. Is that purpose or you're trying to keep a fairly lean corporate office?
Well, you know what? I think that when you've got the right people in place, there's no need to simply throw a person at a job. We are careful to sit down when we have our 1 year and our 5 year strategic sessions, and we look at what roles we're going to need when and for what. And and until we hit those milestones, if we feel that we're lacking in a certain area, we got to sit back and look at ourselves and wonder why. How can we be more efficient when we've already identified that we're not going to need such a role until a certain time? On the flip side, because it's a small team, we're able to compensate it in a healthy way and incentivize performance. So when the company wins, they're winning as well. And as a result, we attract really talented people. So it's a relatively young workforce. If you were to drop by and visit, you would see many people in their late 20s to mid 30s. And they're truly bought into what we do here. And it's an exciting place where everybody holds each other accountable.
Are you able to find them mostly in the Halifax area, or do you have to import them from across the country?
So far, we've found them, for the most part, found everybody locally. Often they've been an arm's length or two from current team members. We're very, as a small group, we want to make sure that people are not only a professional fit, but a cultural fit as well, because we have a good thing going here. So, that can often lead to that.
Well, Roger, David and I love head office jobs in Atlantic Canada. We don't have enough of them. So your 20 is important in our view, and we need a lot more of those jobs. So congrats on that.
Thanks, Don.
So let's talk about the supplement business for a bit. Tell us about your main product categories, if you could, and maybe what is your top selling product or products that you currently offer?
Sure. So our top product categories would be protein powders, and that could be a variety of different sources, be it vegan protein, whey protein, or alternative proteins, be they different blends. Then intra-workout and pre-workout. Those would be 1, 2, and 3. So they would be products that you would consume pre-exercise, during exercise, or after exercise. Some people choose to partake in all three. Some may only choose to consume one category, but those would be the three that make up the bulk of our business.
Okay. By the way, I use one of your products. It's called InstaFlex. Instaflex, and it's a great product.
Excellent. This would be joint health, Don?
Yeah. When you get old like me, you need help. Anyway, it works amazing, and we get into the efficacy of supplements in a second. Beyond supplements, you also mentioned that you have branded merchandise. Can you give us an example of what sort of branded merchandise items you would carry?
Sure. We produce different types of bottles, different sizes, different functions. We have an insulated bottle that's stainless steel, and it can be, you know, you can consume products through a straw or through a traditional spout. We make t-shirts and hooded sweaters. Mm. We make lifting straps and wrist wraps and all kinds of other exercise accessories. Mm. We make exercise bands for resistance training. So there's a huge portfolio of items that all fit our mission statement.
Yeah. Any idea what proportion of your sales would be attributed to branded merchandise at this point?
So many of the branded merchandise also fit into our different free over programs. And what I mean by that is we have different thresholds if you purchase with us that you'll be offered a free gift. So free over 125 or free over 300, those are two of the thresholds that have different gift values. So, right. And our sell through versus giveaways is typically we give away every three for every one that we sell.
Okay.
For the stores and for us, it is a significant piece of what we do, but still probably only, edging on 15%.
Okay. Thanks. So there are a lot of questions about the supplement business, as you're probably aware, in terms of the effectiveness of the products that are out there and the safety of those products as well. So I just wanted to ask you about what your company does to ensure that the products that you sell are safe and work as described.
This really hits home because we have been... certainly, in my opinion, the compliance leader in the market for quite some time now, even to our own commercial detriment, in the sense that in Canada, the natural product number, otherwise known as the NPN, is the standard for natural health products. It is required that every product sold in Canada contain an NPN and is registered with Health Canada. For many years, enforcement was quite minimal. Which created a fairly significant gray market for some retailers to sell products or import products from other countries that had not applied for or were compliant with NPN standards. Now, as a chain that was growing and that has continued to grow, this is not an area that we will ever play in. So for us to see this artificial marketplace out there for some of our smaller competitors was very frustrating. So we are very supportive of compliance and enforcement around natural health product numbers, and hopefully we will see more of that.
And now that you're a large company, you must have more buying power with your suppliers. How does that work, and how does that translate into your customers?
We work every year with our suppliers and all through the year, helping them to identify new trends in products that are going to be in demand in Canada, so that they can get on that NPN application and look at an import opportunity. Right from the get-go, we want to build that business case back from what we feel to be an acceptable retail price to a price that is sustainable within our business plan, to a price where the distributor can afford to do business with these products. A relationship works when everybody is successful. We need our distributors to continue to be successful in order to be there for all of the retailers across the country. But as we buy bigger, we are able to assist them in buying bigger, and that trickle-down economy hopefully is what we're achieving over time. Now, commodities are something that, a lot of businesses deal with, and whey being the largest protein source we work with is no stranger to that. The commodity price of whey can fluctuate pretty wildly over the course of a year. So as a retailer, we want to offer more stability than that to the customer. So we try to minimize the amount of price increases that take place and price decreases that take place. And through that, over the course of a year, we tend to find a pretty neutral, even ground.
So how do you do that? You're negotiating sort of long-term deals with your distributors, or well, how do you keep that price sort of constant?
Correct. So they can lock in our buying over a longer period. They can purchase their commodities at a lower price or something that's been negotiated in advance. But on the other side of that would be our vendor partners and us as retailers. We will sometimes absorb some margin hits along the way to maintain that price stability in the market. Because historically we've seen environments of higher pricing followed by environments of more stable pricing. And, that predictability, especially when you're looking at a basket size of over $70 a ticket in our stores, people are looking for that predictable spend as often as they come in.
Just as an aside, can you give us a sense of where all this, these supplements, these products, the proteins and so on, where's the center of production? Is it Asia? Is it the U.S.? Is it Canada? Like, do you have a sense of that for us?
Yeah. For us, the majority of the products that we sell are produced in Canada and distributed and sold in Canada. It is something that we look for. The production standards in Canada are high, and the oversight is good. The industry does take a bit of a black eye from some of the bad actors that typically originate in the U.S. A lot of these stories of different pharmaceuticals that end up in natural health products are U.S. are U.S. stories. But once they spread far and wide on the internet, they tend to paint everybody with the same brush. So, on top of the products that are produced in Canada are the products that are imported from the United States, and those go through the natural health product process so that they're vetted for efficacy as well.
Just do you promote the fact that a lot of your products are produced in Canada, or is that wouldn't resonate with your customer base?
It can change over time, David. So we're careful not to stand too tall on that pedestal. We are, however, speaking of Made in Canada, we are now putting some emphasis within our stores by adding some fixturing around the fact that we are a Canadian company. When we did some research, we came to realize that some of our customers didn't even realize we were a Canadian company, thought that we were a U.S., I guess, conglomerate, for lack of a better term, which was both exciting and disappointing at the same time. Exciting in the sense that they felt that way because of the level of polish and detail in the store layout and the fixturing, but disappointing because we want to be connecting with Canadian customers. And I believe it's a competitive advantage to be known as a Canadian company in doing so.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I've been involved with lots of research over the years, obviously through my market research company. One of the things that we found is that everything being equal, people prefer to deal with companies that are owned by Canadians, and that's there's something like a 15% differential between, like in our region, a good example is Kent Building Supplies versus Home Depot, and if you look at a Kent Building Supplies, they'll say Atlantic Canadian owned and operated on their stores. That was done there because of our research that showed that if you can compete on price and selection, product and service, they'll give you the benefit of being Canadian or locally owned. And so that, I'm glad that you're using that to your advantage.
Thanks, Don. And you're bang on. It's not a get out of jail free card just because you're locally owned and operated or Canadian. You need to be sharp in your offering.
100%. Yeah.
But it does raise the question, though, if you have any plans to grow internationally at some point in the future.
Terrific. Look, we are certainly not ignorant to the opportunity that exists south of the border. It is something that we're laying the foundation for now. It certainly isn't something that we're going to embark upon sooner than 3 years from now. There is a new supply chain relationship that will need to take place, one that we've opened the door to early. And when the time comes, it will be our existing largest, strongest operators from Canada who will cross over the border and expand with us in a strategic way. What I mean by that is we will likely be looking at smaller communities where our marketing message will resonate with more people for less cost. and then work our way into larger, more urban centers.
You talked about culture a little earlier. Is that sort of, is there any opportunity for growth by acquisition? Are there smaller chains in the U.S. that you could scoop up and rebrand, or that's not really in the cards?
I'm not opposed to that. I think that there could be some exciting opportunities. The U.S. is full of, you know, 20 and 30 store networks that operate at a very high level. The margin expectation is different in the States, but as is the revenue number, the top line number is higher because they simply have more people. So that's certainly not off the table.
Just one other additional question on product safety. There have been calls for more regulation of the supplement industry, including clinical studies to back up claims. You know, I think there's got to be lines there. I mean, you can't have a clinical study for every type of product. But what do you have a sort of a position on this as a company?
For us, the natural product number, the NPN, which is the highest standard of regulatory efficacy that exists today, that is our bar, and it's our bar none. So we will not list, nor will we permit to be sold any product that doesn't meet that level of compliance in Canada. I do welcome some enforcement around that. As I mentioned, it would be nice to see all competitors, operating that same high bar level. As far as increased scrutiny, the large Canadian producers that have been in the Canadian market for a number of years and are operating successfully today, they don't need that oversight. They already, operate GMP, good manufacturing practice facilities. They do take the NPN very seriously and all of the compliance measures seriously. It's really, again, it's trying to weed out those bad apples, the fly-by-night operations. I think that can be done without making it more difficult to do business to those who are operating with integrity today. And I think that probably holds true in many industries as well.
So I want to change tracks for a second and talk a little bit about your staffing side of the business. What, if any, challenges have you had attracting and retaining employees across the country?
Well, at the corporate office, we haven't had any attrition at the management level. We've had a few people at the administrative level find other opportunities, but we don't have any difficulty attracting talented people here because the organization is growing. We create and foster an environment of accountability, but significant freedom in the when. If somebody works better at night, as long as they're able to achieve all of the things that are fall with under the scope of responsibility, they can do their work when they need to do their work. They can take vacation to an unlimited level, but there are responsibilities that need to be managed. And we found that, when you find the right people that are able to work in an environment like that, in that way, the commitment level is really hard to beat. So we haven't had challenges here corporately. Locally, I think I mentioned before, many of the people that join our store teams do so because they're passionate about nutrition and fitness. So, I'd like to think that that's a little different than the motivation for, salting fries or flipping a hamburger. Maybe the passion is a little bit different. And as a result, we tend to keep our employees at the store level longer than, in other retail sectors. So we've been fortunate on that front.
So obviously, product knowledge by your employees is important to your success. In fact, you promote the company's personalized service as one of your key benefits, I suppose. Tell us about the process that you use to train your employees to have the kind of knowledge that is needed to advise your customers about the right supplement for them.
Yeah, so we have extensive e-learning in that app that I had mentioned earlier on, and continuous learning via dial-in opportunities with the different brands that we sell and those who lead those companies and create those products. Our team members in store are offered so many opportunities to further their education on the supplement front. For us, the focus is on our categories and which categories best suit which fitness goal. So when people come in and share that they're looking to shed a little bit of extra body fat and they have a certain experience with exercise or no experience with exercise, that will then lead them in different directions in terms of product conversations, further goal-based conversations. There's training around asking open-ended questions so that you know, are able to get more information from people when they come in to visit us. These are the things that we obsess over and put a lot of time and effort behind.
Do you have any specific retention strategies to help you retain your employees, even in the retail stores across the country?
Some of our very motivated and strongest licensees operate incentives around basket size, the ability. You know, it's not about an upsell. It's about a proving ground to show that the employee knows how to talk about other products that will support those goals. You know, anybody can ring somebody in at a checkout when they walk in and grab something off a shelf. Did you take the time to talk about the why around that product? Did you take the time to talk about their history? You know, what did you try previously? Is this the first time using this product? Is it new to you? All of those conversations create new opportunities for them to experience a different product that will likely, you know, lead them to a more successful outcome around that fitness goal. So that would be one of the things that we do typically train the store owners around and do encourage.
Just a couple of questions left, but we did want to ask you, and you've touched on this already around the sort of real estate side of things. But other than that, what are your key criteria for selecting a location? Why, for example, if you just did sort of a per capita, you know, you wouldn't necessarily have 13 stores in Edmonton. So what are those criteria that you're using to choose locations?
Well, you know, when somebody will plant a 30,000 foot fitness center in a certain area, that for us is a strong indicator that there's going to be market for us. They're going to be like-minded consumers making their way to that center. We are looking for premium retail centers with, you know, co-tenants that would be like-minded. Booster Juice comes to mind as a co-tenant where we are located in many centers across the country with them. So it strikes me that we are probably after the same demographic. The leasing for us now, you know, as we have multi units in a particular city, we can stray a little bit from that gym model. But you would be, David, Don, you would be blown away by the number of new master planned communities that are popping up all over Canada. It just seems to be when we think that we've reached a saturation point in a market like Edmonton or Calgary or, you know, the lower mainland in the Vancouver area, you would think that you're at a saturation point and there's a new master planned community for 4,000 homes and a tremendous commercial center with a 30,000 foot fitness center. When those plans come out, that's a new supplement king every single time.
I want to ask you, it's not scheduled, but it strikes me that Quebec's a challenging market for most people. Are you in Quebec?
We are not in Quebec. We operate in every province except Quebec. We're in the midst of formulating our Quebec strategy. You know, I can't really comment too much further on that, but there's some ideas around what we're going to do there.
Yeah. I'm glad I asked that question because it's always a little more challenging to operate in Quebec, obviously, with French as the primary language there.
Yeah. Authenticity is key. You know, when we do make an entry into Quebec, we want to make sure that we're authentic to our values as well as the values of the consumer in Quebec.
Yeah, 100%. I another question I wanted to ask you, and I think it's pertinent, and we talked about retention of employees. What kind of loyalty are you finding among your customer base? Do you track that, you know, the percentage of sales to the kind of the same customer base? Do you do any of that kind of tracking?
Yeah, we do. We want to make sure that we try to see every customer in a 90-day window, 90-day cycle. Our flyer planning also, which, you know, we have a monthly set of specials that are launched, usually every 4 weeks, sometimes shorter duration. We make sure that when that customer is ready to visit us again in 90 days, that what they're typically looking for is once again, you know, on offer. It may just be with a different company or a different brand. Internally, we track all of the tickets that happen at every single store every single day. We're looking at how many new customers are making their way in. What does that basket size look like? How many customers are we retaining every 90 days, every 120 days, every 6 months? It's important to see, you know, the best operators have a certain milestone that we want the other operators to strive for. And there's training around that.
Yeah. You know, and the one benefit of being, you know, getting to 100 is that you create norms, standards, right, of success that you can use for everybody to try to achieve, obviously. So having those norms or goals that within the store is obviously very helpful to your operators.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. So a couple of just final questions, Roger. You know, you're a rarity in this region. You started the company in this region and you became a national company. It doesn't happen that often. That's why we wanted to tell your stories. You're now, if not the leading, one of the leading supplement retailers in Canada. So we want to ask you, what advice do you have for others trying to become a national brand out of Atlantic Canada?
I love this question. I wouldn't give the location of our office any headspace at all. I think whether a company is located in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, or located in Toronto, it's always the best plan with the best team that's going to emerge victorious. You know, there are some logistical advantages, particularly if you are doing large scale warehousing or a lot of freight, to being located more centrally. But from a head office and a talent perspective, I wouldn't want it any other way.
Yeah. So, you know, you're a young guy. What's the vision for your company looking ahead?
Well, I think that we can saturate the Canadian market in the next 4 or 5 years. I mean, I say that with some hesitation because the way our population is growing, you know, what we once thought was saturation will probably be a thing of the past come 5 years from now, and that number will have changed. Looking at some international opportunities is definitely something that I see on the radar and a great value proposition for us as a company. As long as people continue to value health and fitness, which I firmly believe is not a trend, it's not going anywhere. The more people learn about living a healthier and longer life, the more people come into the natural health product space. I think that we'll always have a space to grow. So it's exciting.
I just want to ask you one last question because I'm always interested. Like, what motivates you? Like, why not just settle for a smaller business with maybe 10 stores, no risk, you know, good enough cash flow that you can have a good lifestyle? Like, what motivates a young guy like you to build a company that's this size and have plans to double it and even grow it much, much further? Like, what actually motivates you?
Well, I guess there are two motivations there. I mean, one is fear of leaving value on the table. I mean, you know, when I would look down the mall hallway and I operated a kiosk in Scotia Square, I remember mapping out on paper and in my head what this business looked like at 10 units, doing the performance I was doing there. And it was a good business. It was exciting. And then as I would achieve that milestone, I would be looking at what 25 stores looks like, mapping that out, mapping what was required, and that looked like a good business. So I guess, David, until it stops looking like a good business, I would be fearful of leaving value on the table.
Yeah, okay. Just as a follow-up to that, do you did you have entrepreneurs in your family? Like, why did you even think about entrepreneurship to begin with? Well, St. Mary's is not exactly a hotbed for entrepreneurs.
Yeah. I was not an academic. I'll admit that. I'm an easily distracted kind of guy. I really enjoy building relationships. I really enjoy looking at a challenge and finding a roadmap into how to work our way through it. So I think that entrepreneurship really lent itself to some of the talents that I had. You know, whereas if somebody had to put me down in front of a professional examination to be a lawyer or an accountant, I would struggle immensely in both preparation and execution. So I think that entrepreneurship, and, you know, I'm involved with a few other businesses as well as a shareholder. This really suits my personality type and maybe my talent set.
On that note, thank you so much for joining us today on the Insights Podcast and telling us this inspiring story about how you've built this company so quickly and so robustly and your plans for the future. It's a great success story, and we wish you all the best in the years ahead.
Well, thank you, David. Thank you, Don. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Roger.
Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the Insights Podcast from the Acadia Broadcasting Corporation. Follow the show and listen to past episodes on your favorite podcast platform, like Apple or Spotify. If you've enjoyed the show, why not recommend it to a friend? Don and David will be back next week with another deep dive into some key issues in Atlantic Canada.